Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the United States was complicit in the recent terrorist attack on a shrine in Shiraz because of its role in creating Daesh. Iranian foreign minister tells a regional conference in Jordan that only regional states can enhance security and stability in West Asia. The U.S. flies its strategic bombers and stealth fighters to South Korea following the North's latest ballistic missile tests. I'm Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Iran's Islamic Revolution leader says the United States was behind the deadly October attack on a holy shrine in southern Iran. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says Washington is an accomplice to the crime, as it was the main sponsor and creator of Daesh terrorist group, which claimed the attack. The leader made those comments in a meeting with the victims' families. He said killing pilgrims is quite different from other acts of terror. It brings further disgrace on the enemy. Ayatollah Khamenei described those behind the terrorist act as liars and hypocrites. He said that they claim to be advocates of human rights, but in practice they create dangerous terrorist groups. The terrorist attack on Shah Cheragh Shrine in Shiraz left 13 pilgrims dead, including a young boy. Iran's top diplomat has urged regional countries to jointly deal with challenges facing West Asia. Hossein Amir Abdullahian stressed Iran's commitment to improving stability and security of the region with the help of neighbors. He stressed that dialogue between nations is a critical component to achieve such a process. The top diplomat also advocated a West Asia free of nuclear weapons. He expressed Iran's solidarity with the Palestinian cause as well. Amir Abdullahian was addressing the second edition of the Baghdad Conference for Cooperation and Partnership in Jordan. The summit aims to provide support for stability, security, and prosperity of Iraq and the region as a whole. Historian and political analyst Marcus Papadopoulos joined us with his take on the instability caused by the U.S. and its allies in West Asia as a summit is underway in Jordan discussing regional security.
Do the Americans, the British, and the French care for the well-being of people across West Asia? Well, let's judge them by their actions. As a result of Western sanctions on Iraq, untold numbers of Iraqi men, women, and children died and died painful deaths. When Madeleine Albright was asked whether the deaths of untold Iraqi children were worth the price of American sanctions, she responded by saying yes. When the Western powers invaded Iraq in 2003, more than 1 million Iraqi civilians would subsequently die. As a result of Western powers supporting terrorist groups in Syria, such as ISIS and Al-Qaeda, again, hundreds of thousands of Syrian men, women, and children died and died painful and violent deaths. As a result of America and Britain's war on the people of Yemen.
Now, on the sidelines of the Jordan summit, a meeting was held between the top nuclear negotiators of Iran and the European Union. Iran's foreign minister and the EU foreign policy chief were also in attendance. Two sides are trying to break the impasse in the talks for the revival of the 2015 nuclear deal. Iran's permanent ambassador to the UN has called on the U.S. to choose diplomacy over pressure, intimidation, and confrontation. Amir Saeed Iravani said that this is the way forward if the U.S. wants to revive the agreement known as the JCPOA. He said Iran is ready to resume the Vienna talks on the revival of the accord. The official has stressed that the standoff is a direct result of Washington's unilateral withdrawal from the nuclear deal in 2018. In the meantime, Palestinian groups have reacted to the death of Nasser Abu Hamed, a senior commander of the Fatah movement in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. Fatah says that such incidents expose the fascist nature of Israel in its treatment of Palestinian prisoners. It says the regime is directly responsible for the death. Hamas Resistance Movement is also calling for stronger resistance against the Israeli policy of medical negligence toward Palestinian inmates. Hamas has slammed Tel Aviv for what it calls the regime's terrorist behavior toward Palestinians. A general strike has also been announced in Ramallah in reaction to the Palestinians' death. Israeli soldiers and settlers have stepped up attacks against Palestinian civilians in the occupied West Bank and other areas. Two Palestinian brothers have become the latest victims of the crimes. A settler deliberately ran over them in Nablus and then fled the scene. Hamas has accused the Tel Aviv regime of allowing the perpetrators to get away with those crimes to further incite such violence against Palestinians.
An Israeli settler has run over two Palestinian brothers near the city of Nablus in the north of the occupied West Bank, making them the latest victims of Israeli settler crimes. According to Palestinian media, Mohammad Mutair and his brother Mohannad had stopped their vehicle by the side of the road near the Zatara military checkpoint south of Nablus to fix a flat tire. It was then that an Israeli settler hit the siblings, who were traveling around with their family members at the time, and fled the scene. The victim's relatives said that 28-year-old Mohammed was killed immediately after being trampled on by the settler, while his brother, 24-year-old Mohannad, was seriously injured in the same accident and was later announced dead due to his injuries. Reacting to the atrocity, Hazem Qasem, a spokesman for the Gaza Strip-based Hamas-Palestinian resistance movement, said the settlers are escalating their aggression against Palestinians. He added that the formation of the new right-wing government in Israel has apparently emboldened settlers to ratchet up their crimes against Palestinians. He described the incident as a new episode in the series of, quote, Zionist terrorism under the protection of the regime's police and army, saying this crime must be answered by increasing the resistance in the West Bank. Israeli occupation soldiers and settlers have been noticeably escalating their attacks against Palestinian civilians in the West Bank and other areas, in an attempt to forcibly expel Palestinians from their lands and make way for expanding Israeli settlements. Israeli forces have also been conducting overnight raids and killings in the northern occupied West Bank, mainly in the cities of Jenin and Nablus, where new groups of Palestinian resistance fighters have been formed. Since the start of 2022, Israeli troops have killed more than 210 Palestinians, including more than 50 children, in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, as well as the besieged Gaza Strip. Earlier, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs described 2022 as the deadliest year for Palestinians since 2005, when the UN started to keep a tally of Palestinian fatalities. The world body says Israeli forces have shot dead 19 Palestinians, including 3 children, in different incidents across the occupied territories between November 22nd and December 11th. In addition to the killings, Israeli forces have blocked the main entrances of several villages across the West Bank, disrupting livelihoods of thousands of Palestinians.
In yet another provocative move against Palestinian worshippers, scores of Israeli settlers stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds, and that was under pretext of celebrating the Jewish festival of Hanukkah. Palestinian forces, factions, and commissions have urged defense of the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Scores of Israeli settlers, guarded by police, have stormed the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds under the pretext of celebrating Hanukkah holiday. Earlier, the Israeli police stormed Al-Aqsa and forcibly expelled Palestinians stationed inside, paving the way for the illegal settlers to storm the compound. Israeli forces deployed heavily inside Al-Quds Old City in preparation for securing the settlers' incursions and preventing Palestinians from entering the mosque. Israeli settlers intend to storm Al-Aqsa for 8 days to celebrate the so-called Hanukkah, also known as Festival of Lights, which extends from December 18th to December 26th, as settler groups promoted the storming by announcing free transportation for its members. Israeli groups and extremist settlers had previously called for massive incursions into the holy site during the Hanukkah holidays. Hardline Israeli officials and settlers regularly stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied city, a provocative move that infuriates Palestinians. Settlers' incursions on Al-Aqsa Mosque frequently trigger clashes that leave casualties among Palestinians. Such acts of violence even led to an 11-day war between Palestinian resistance groups in the besieged Gaza Strip and the Israeli regime in 2021, during which the regime forces killed at least 260 Palestinians, including 66 children. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has condemned the latest raid on Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israeli settlers. Hamas says such incursions are provocative and very dangerous. The movement has urged Palestinians to mobilize immediately in defense of Al-Aqsa Mosque. The resistance movement stressed the Palestinian nation will make sure to protect the mosque under any circumstances, warning Israel of the consequences of raids on the holy site. The Jewish visitation of Al-Aqsa is permitted, but as part of a decades-old agreement between Jordan, the custodian of Islamic and Christian sites in Al-Quds, and Israel in the wake of Israel's occupation of East Al-Quds in 1967, non-Muslim worship at the compound is prohibited.
And Pakistan security forces have retaken a police station seized by militants in the country's northwest. Defense Minister Khawaja Mohammad Asif said it altered it. Three militants involved in hostage taken were killed in clashes with special forces. He said all the hostages, including 8 police officers, were freed, but 2 officers were killed in the operation. On Sunday, hostage takers who were suspected of being members of different militant groups overpowered their jailers and snatch weapons. They demanded a safe passage to neighboring Afghanistan in return for releasing the hostages. The Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, which bears allegiance to the Taliban in Afghanistan, has claimed responsibility. The group operating along border areas has stepped up attacks since the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan last year. Okay, from Islamabad, let's bring in our correspondent, Nasser Kazemi. Nasser, good to have you with us. So tell us more about this incident.
Yes, finally, the 3-day the siege, which were held in the capital Pakhtunkhwa province of Pakistan, finally came to an end, and all the hostages were set free by Pakistani security forces after a successful operation, which remained continue for at least 3 hours today. And the security forces managed to kill all 33 militants who were inside the compound. The defense minister, Pakistan defense minister Khawaja Mohammad Asif, told the lawmakers in today's parliament session that the militants took control of the jail and they were trying to set free all of their militants who were inside the jail, and they were asking a safe passage to go to Afghanistan via helicopter or via the ground routes. But at the moment, the operation has been successfully managed by Pakistani military. Earlier, the police were trying to manage this operation, but there were talks going on between Pakistani clerics who were sent by Pakistani government to Afghanistan yesterday, but there were no outcome of those talks. So finally, Pakistan military came into action, and the Pakistan's military commandos conducted this operation today and managed to kill all 33 militants from Pakistan Tehrik-e-Taliban militant group. So at the moment, Pakistan is facing, the surge in attacks in this eastern border as well as southwestern Pakistan. In Balochistan, we have witnessed yesterday that there was a bomb attack which wounded at least 16 people, while The militants in South Waziristan, they also stormed a police station early this morning, and there were reports that more than 9 police officials were injured in this attack. So the attacks from TTP group who is said to be hiding in Afghanistan has been increased in recent days, and the government of Pakistan is trying to resolve this issue through talks, but as we have witnessed in the past, that there were more than 15 ceasefires agreements between Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan and the Pakistani government. However, all these ceasefires agreements were not, yielded the fruitful results. So at the moment, Pakistan is confronting with the militants at the same time. On the other side, the Taliban in Afghanistan, they are also, carrying out attacks on Pakistani civilian population. In Balochistan, we have witnessed that two consecutive attacks on Pakistan's civilian population were taken place in the last 2 weeks, and more than 9 people have lost their lives, while several others were wounded in those attacks. Meanwhile, Pakistani government and the opposition party, the former Pakistani prime minister, is blaming the government for the surge in the attacks. Pakistan's former prime minister, Imran Khan, has criticized the government that the government is not doing enough to stop such activities in Pakistan, as we have seen that Pakistan, when Pakistan was a frontline state of the United States, it has faced such activities from the militants. Afghanistan was the place which was said to be the safe havens for the Al-Qaeda and Taliban militants at that time. But now when there is a government by the Taliban, in Afghanistan, the attacks, there has been surge in upsurge in these attacks in recent weeks. So Pakistani government, which were trying to, convince Taliban to stop these activities. However, at the moment, there is no fruitful response from the Afghan government at the moment.
Okay, great. I was just going to ask you what Taliban has done and if the government has done anything to prevent it, and you just answered that question. Thank you so much. Nasser Kazimir, correspondent in Islamabad. Tensions remain high on the Korean Peninsula. The U.S. has reportedly deployed B-52 bombers and F-22 fighters for joint drills with South Korea. The deployments are the first since May 2018. They come days after Pyongyang launched 2 mid-range ballistic missiles. North Korea says its recent slew of missile tests are a response to the growing U.S. presence in the region and its joint military drills with South Korea and Japan. North Korea has denounced Japan's new security strategy after it unveiled its biggest military buildup since World War II. Pyongyang says that Tokyo's talk of the right to preemptive strikes represents a new aggression policy. North Korea's warning of practical countermeasures. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. لكنك تقدست أسماءك أقسمت أن تملأها من الكافرين من الجنة والناس أجمعين وأن تخلد فيها المعاندين. Dear listeners, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. لَكِنَّكَ تَقَدَّسَتْ أَسْمَاؤُكَ أَقْسَمْتَ أَن تَمْلَأَهَا مِنَ الْكَافِرِينَ مِنَ الْجِنَّةِ وَالنَّاسِ أَجْمَعِينَ. But you, holy are your names, have sworn that you will fill it with the unbelievers, both jinn and men, وَأَن تُخَلِّدَ فِيهَا الْمُعَانِدِينَ, and you will place those who stubbornly resist therein forever. وأن تجلى ثناؤك قلت مبتدئا وتطولت بالإنعام متكرما. And you, majestic is your eulogy, said through kindness as a favor. What? أفمن كان مؤمنا كمن كان فاسقا لا يستوون. Is he who has been a believer like him who has been ungodly? They are not equal. As we said about this part of the supplication, none of the prophets and the imams and those favorite servants of the Almighty Allah are expecting Allah to treat them with chastisement. The Almighty, who has called himself in the Holy Quran as the most merciful of the merciful, is not expected to chastise those who truly believe. So the chastisement of hereafter is not related to the believers at all. That is why at the end of the part that we try to discuss, it is said, أَفَمَنْ كَانَ مُؤْمِنًا كَمَنْ كَانَ فَاسِقًا لَا يَسْتَوُونَ. Of course, these two groups are totally different. They have different endings. Now, about the difference that فَاسِق has in his heart, it has to be mentioned that the soul, or qalb, is a very important device. It receives from Allah, and it tries to somehow give something out after receiving it. Now, what happens to some fasiqeen
that they lose this feature of connecting to Allah. What happens if a qalb, if nafs, if the heart, somehow speaking, it is devoid of all its value, it will no longer be of any benefit. It would be lifeless. But if the soul receives from Allah that guidance, that light, that spiritual insight, it gives out this guidance to the man who is the owner of that qalb. So it is helped. He is helped in his movements, in his speech, in his actions and relations. Let us contemplate on the different verses of the Holy Quran to understand this important role of soul from this perspective, that what is happening to the qalb of the fasiq and what is the role of soul in receiving guidance from Allah and giving it out. Stay with us and we'll try to have a look at some different verses of the Holy Quran after a short break.
Decreed your enemies to remain in hell, you would have made hell cool and peaceful, and there would never have been an abode or place for anyone in it. But sanctified be your name, you have sworn to fill hell with the disbelievers from amongst the jinns and mankind together, and to place forever your enemies therein. And you, exalted be your praises, have made manifest out of your generosity and kindness that a believer is not like he who is a non-believer.
Paradise, oh what a feeling, paradise. Thank you Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Dear listeners, in one verse of the Holy Quran, in chapter Furqan, we read, the faithless say, وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا, why has not the Quran been sent down to him all at once? لَوْلَا نُزِّلَ عَلَيْهِ الْقُرْآنَ جُمْلَةً وَاحِدَةً. So it is so that we may strengthen your heart with it. كَذَلِكَ لِنُثَبِّتَ بِهِ فُؤَادَكَ وَرْتَلْنَاهُ تَرْتِيلًا. And that is why we recited it to you in a measured tone. The Quran descends on the heart at once and sometimes in parts. It strengthens the heart. The heart acquires it from the divine light and guidance. The Holy Quran elsewhere says, this is an explanation for mankind and a guidance and advice for the God-wary. The Holy Quran says in the 23rd verse of chapter Zumar, Allah نزل أحسن الحديث كتابا متشابها مثانية تقشعر منه جلود الذين يخشون ربهم. Allah has sent down the best of discourses as a scripture composed of similar motifs, whereat quiver the skins of those who fear their Lord. ثُمَّ تَلِينُ جُلُودُهُمْ وَقُلُوبُهُمْ إِلَىٰ ذِكْرِ اللَّهِ. Then their skins and hearts soften to Allah's remembrance. Now, have a look at this verse. According to this one, The heart receives the Holy Quran, that which humbles, that somehow softens it. And the heart interacts with the guidance of Allah and His light, which He has sent to His servants. Because the Holy Quran indeed is a guidance from Allah. And it is His proof, it is His light to the creatures to help them reach true salvation. That is why one aspect of the difference between mu'min and fasiq is that mu'min is able to receive this light from Almighty Allah. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be the most close to you throughout my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
When it comes to Peru, the country is unraveling quickly. Just last week, Peru's president, Pedro Castillo, was removed from office. His charge, rebellion, which came after he announced that he would shut down Congress and install a government of exception. This occurred just before he was due to face an impeachment vote. Then came his arrest, charged with allegedly breaching constitutional order. But these accusations were not enough. He was also accused of an attempted coup. Enter Castillo's vice president, Dina Boluarte. She also accused the president of a coup attempt. And just a few short hours later, she was sworn in as the new president, becoming the first female head of state in Peru's history. Boluarte called for a political truce and the installation of a national unity government. No surprise that the coup set up mass protests all across Peru. This is while the unelected government ordered a violent crackdown, with police to have killed numerous protesters. Yet things have moved rather too quickly, leading one to conclude that there may be foreign hands at play, in this instance, from the U.S. For example, just 2 days before a coup against its elected president Castillo, the ex-CIA agent and U.S. ambassador to Peru, Lisa Kenna, met with Peru's defense minister. And there are reports that Peru's defense minister, who's a retired brigadier general, ordered the military to turn against Castillo. The U.S. ambassador to Peru, Lisa Kenna, met with Peru's unelected leader, Dina Boluarte, and reiterated Washington's wholehearted support. Kenna, in another post, tweeted, "The U.S. categorically rejects any extra constitutional act by President Castillo to prevent Congress from fulfilling its mandate." This all showed that the U.S. government had staunchly supported Peru's unelected administration. In a statement, the U.S. State Department stated, "The U.S. commends Peru's institutions and authorities for safeguarding democratic stability. Troubled by violent demonstrations and reports of attacks on the press and private property, the U.S. recognizes Dina Boluarte as the country's president." When Castillo moved to dissolve Congress, he cited Article 134, and he made it clear that it was only going to be a temporary closure. He said new congressional elections would be held as soon as possible. Yet the U.S. ambassador to Peru failed to mention Article 134 of Peru's constitution, which states, "The President of the Republic is authorized to dissolve Congress if it has censured or denied its confidence to two councils of ministers." The dissolution decree contains the call for elections for a new Congress. The U.S. Ambassador Kenna ignored all of this. Instead, she declared, "The U.S. emphatically urges President Castillo to reverse his attempt to close Congress and allow the democratic institutions of Peru to function according to the Constitution." By this, the CIA veteran meant that Castillo should simply allow the anti-democratic Congress to launch a coup against him. The U.S. Embassy in Peru subsequently published an official statement echoing exactly what Kenna had said. This was Washington's green light for Peru's right-wing-dominated Congress to overthrow President Castillo and for the state security services to arrest him without trial. So it's no surprise there have been headlines that read, "The U.S. egged on the coup in Peru." The move by Pedro Castillo to dissolve Congress ahead of a third impeachment motion seems to be the result of a pressure campaign with support from the U.S. But why would the U.S. be interested in a coup in Peru? One motivation behind the U.S. could be in Peru's natural resources. Peru has a wealth of mineral resources like copper, iron, lead, and zinc. Gold and silver are also found extensively. On the other hand, the U.S. has been against the group of left-wing presidents who have taken over in Latin America in what's called the pink tide, with many not leaning so much towards the West's economic and financial system, like from the U.S. After all, they did not reap the rewards that a Western capital system offers, which has turned out to be just a mirage. Brazil's president Lula da Silva has even said that it wants to move away from the dollar and decrease the dependency as much as possible. The CIA has organized many coups against democratically elected left-wing leaders in Latin America, from Guatemala's president Jacobo Arbenz in 1954 to Chile's president Salvador Allende in 1973, not to mention the attempts to remove the former Venezuelan president Hugo Chavez.
Japan is allocating $320 billion in an effort to build up its military, a move that would be unthinkable under previous administrations. But now, under the Liberal Democratic Party led by Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, surveys say the budget has the favor of over 70% of voters. The military developments include extending the range of Japan's missiles, stockpiling of spare parts and other munitions, reinforcing logistics, developing cyber warfare capabilities, and cooperating more with U.S. and other like-minded countries. The extension of the range of Japanese missiles is only meant to be able to reach China, if the need were to ever arise, as there is no other reason to extend the range to around 1,000 kilometers. The reason why Japan feels the need to advance its missile technology is the escalation of tensions in the Indo-Pacific region. North Korea has, on multiple occasions, tested intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of carrying nuclear warheads, one of which landed a little too close for comfort to Japan. The China-Taiwan tensions are also cause for concern for Japan, as a potential military escalation could put Japan in danger as well. This is because of the large number of troops and massive amounts of supplies that the U.S. has stationed in Japan, which they would most likely take advantage of in case of an escalation with Taiwan. Here's what Prime Minister Kishida said with regards to the military build-up plan.
We can feel a rapid increase in the severity of the security environment around our country. In countries and the regions surrounding our country, a strengthening of nuclear and missile capabilities, a rapid military build-up, and attempts to unilaterally change the status quo through power are becoming more pronounced.
Kishida also emphasized on the issue of China as a challenge to its security. He said, China's current external stance and military trends are a challenge to our country's peace and security, the securing of global peace and stability, and the enhancement of international order based on the rule of law. To which Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin responded by saying, Japan disregards the facts, deviates from the common understandings between China and Japan, and its commitment to bilateral relations, and discredits China. Japan even believes that Russia is a threat to its security, albeit indirectly. Tokyo sees Russia's war in Ukraine as a dangerous precedent that might encourage China to carry out a similar operation in Taiwan and cause unimaginable disruption to world trade. By taking stances against North Korea, China, and Russia, Japan must look to the U.S. and South Korea as its allies. $320 billion. Once the budget is injected into Japan's military, it will bump up Japan's ranking among the top military spenders in the world from 8th place all the way up to 3rd place, just below the US and China, even higher than Russia during a time of war. And this amount of expenditure is going to hurt Japanese economy. Kishida's plans will double Japan's defense outlays to about 2% of the country's gross domestic product over the next 5 years. It would also mean that Japan's defense ministry will now have 10% of the country's entire annual public spending. In the document that outlines the plan for the military expenditures, what is not included is how the money will come about. It's unclear whether the government will have to raise money through tax increases or whether it will borrow the money. But if we look at the reason behind this unprecedented amount of spending on military by Japan, that is known for its pacifist constitution, we will realize that if not for the US's recent provocative actions, Japan would not deem its security threatened. North Korea's ICBM missile tests only came about as a result of US provocations, and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has mentioned this on multiple occasions. With regards to the issue of Taiwan, if not for the meddling of the U.S. in Taiwan's affairs and the breaking of the One China policy that the U.S. had previously agreed to, China would not have conducted the biggest military exercise in its history. If not for the constant eastward expansion of NATO, spearheaded by the U.S., the war in Ukraine would also not have happened, and Japan's concerns over Russia encouraging China to also attack Taiwan would never come to be. It's almost as if Japan's alliance with the U.S. is costing them more money than it's bringing in. And that is completely disregarding the security risks that this alliance has brought upon the land of the rising sun.
Iran has wrapped the European Union over anti-Tehran measures taken by the Council of the European Union. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian denounced, quote, certain political shows that have been put on display by the Council under the pretext of defending the issue of human rights. The European Council has imposed a slew of fresh sanctions against Iranian natural and legal entities. According to a statement issued by the EU foreign ministers, 20 individuals, along with one entity, the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, have been sanctioned over alleged human rights abuses. The bloc has also slapped sanctions on four more people and as many entities blacklisted over Tehran's alleged drone supplies to Russia. The bloc's new sanctions include asset freezes and travel bans to the EU. The ministers condemned what they called the widespread use of force by the Iranian authorities against protesters. The European Union last month imposed sanctions on a number of Iranian institutions and individuals, including the 24-hour English-language press TV news channel, over alleged rights violations following the recent foreign-backed riots in the country.
In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies, they cooperate with Western governments, but in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the riot.
Foreign-backed riots have hit various Iranian provinces since 22-year-old woman Mahsa Amini died at the hospital on September 16th, 3 days after she collapsed at a police station. An investigation has attributed Amini's death to a medical condition rather than alleged beatings by the police. The violent riots have claimed the lives of dozens of people and security forces while also allowing terrorist attacks across the country. In the last 2 months, the terrorists have set fire to public property and tortured several Basiji members and security forces to death. Western states have been hyper-aggressively pushing the regime change agenda in form of hybrid war, making a sheer mockery of international law. Authorities in the US and the EU have openly and brazenly instigated rioters in Iran through official and unofficial channels. Iran's intelligence ministry has said the United States and the United Kingdom were directly involved in the unrest, adding that dozens of terrorists affiliated with the Israeli regime and anti-revolution groups have also been detained in the unrest.
Online, the MEK organization that's funded by and supported by NATO, they've been teaching people how to make Molotov cocktails, how to use weapons, and they've been attacking police bases, military bases, and also we've had terrorist attacks alongside the Pakistani border, in the no man land in Pakistan, and also in northern Iraq from Iraqi Kurdistan.
Iran says its enemies have waged a hybrid war against the Islamic Republic to weaken national solidarity and hinder the country's progress. Officials say huge amounts of weapons have been shipped into the country by Western and regional intelligence services to carry out terrorist attacks and conduct extensive psychological operations in order to stoke dissatisfaction amongst the Iranian people and make them accuse the Iranian administration for the growing insecurity.
The United States is finalizing plans to send Patriot missile systems to Ukraine. The plan needs the final approval of U.S. Defense Chief Lloyd Austin and the U.S. President Joe Biden. It is not known how many of the batteries will be sent to Ukraine, but reports say supplies to Ukraine will be limited. But according to available data, a typical Patriot battery includes a radar set that detects and tracks targets, computers, and a power-generating equipment. It also includes an engagement control station and up to 8 launchers, each holding 4 radio-fire missiles. The systems are likely to be sent to the U.S. Army base in Grafenwöhr, Germany, where Ukrainian soldiers are likely to be trained and use the equipment. Ukraine has long been requesting the U.S. to send advanced long-range air defense system.
The message is simple. Give Patriots as soon as you can. Because this is the system that Ukraine needs to protect its civilian population and critical infrastructure. This is not an offensive weapon.
Russia has already warned that Patriot missile systems in Ukraine, if are deployed in the conflict, will be targeted. The former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, who is now Deputy Chair of the National Security Council, had earlier warned that such weapons and their crews would be legitimate targets if a NATO member were to deliver them.
Washington уже сделал себя стороной конфликта в практической плоскости. Принимая во внимание растущие объемы прямой американской военной помощи, включая присутствие военнослужащих США на земле, передача столь сложного вооружения, обращение с которым требует многомесячной подготовки, будет означать расширение вовлеченности кадровых американских военных в боевые действия со всеми вытекающими последствиями. Настоятельно советуем тем, кто в Вашингтоне принимает решение, наконец прислушаться, возможно, не к нам, но к самим себе, сделать правильные выводы из наших неоднократных предупреждений о том, что любые поставляемые на Украину оружейные системы, в том числе Patriot, соответственно, обслуживающим персоналом, были и остаются законными приоритетными целями для вооруженных сил России.
The U.S. and its Western partners have already resupplied Ukraine's air defense missiles and shoulder-fired Stinger missiles and other larger air defense systems. Patriot missile system is one of the most advanced U.S. systems against aircraft and missiles. Ukrainian officials say the delivery of Patriot missiles would be a game-changer. But the efficiency of those weapons for Ukraine in the war against Russia is not clear. Each missile battery would require dozens of well-trained air defenders to operate. Even with an accelerated training program, could be sometime in early 2023 before a system is operational in Ukraine. Experts believe the Patriot has a more powerful radar that is better at discriminating targets, but it has its own limitations. Its efficiency would depend on how the weapon was delivered. The success rate of the Patriot has been repeatedly questioned. In 2018, Saudi Arabia's success in using Patriots against missiles fired in the Yemen war were questioned when evidence of systems failing emerged. The Patriot does not reportedly perform so well against small drones. It is not known whether the system's radar could pick up the small, low-flying drones or whether there were other issues. The U.S. has now committed more than $19.3 billion in weapons and other equipment to Ukraine since the war began in February of this year.
As we work with industry to accelerate production on both replenishment systems and direct procurements under the United Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, or USAI, we're using a number of tools to get the funding moving and the contracting happen quickly. These include using contracting mechanisms called things like undefinitized contracting actions, sometimes called UCAs. What that allows you to do deliberately is to get industry working on an initial contract before we definitize it. And you can put a UCA together within a week, and we're doing that. We also are making use of indefinite delivery indefinite quantity contracts, or IDIQ. If you have IDIQs, and we have many of them, what you can do is just add task orders to them very quickly to get equipment on contract.
It is widely believed that those U.S.-made weapons are fanning the flames of war in Europe. But there are concerns that those weapons are falling into the wrong hands.
We're seeing this incredible, historic flow of weapons coming into Ukraine. Do we have any sense as to where they're going?
We don't know. There is really no information as to where they're going at all.
You know, all this stuff goes to the border, and then kind of like something happens, it kind of like 30% maybe reaches its final destination.
Washington is reportedly looking into technological solutions to the problem of weapons diversion. Western weapons earmarked for Ukraine had reportedly surfaced in the hands of militant groups in the African Sahel.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.